Montreal.
For CJLO News, I'm Serena Abuljou. Canadian activist and author Eve Angler was released on Tuesday, February 25, after spending 5 days in prison due to accusations of harassment by pro-Israeli influencer Dalia Kurtz. After SPVM contacted Angler about their plans to arrest him following Kurtz's complaint against him, he went on X to clarify the issue. Angler wrote that while he did respond to the influencer's racist, violent, and anti-Palestinian posts on the platform, he did not harass, message, or threaten her. In response to Angler's posts about his arrest and the accusations against him, the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute initiated an action campaign. By the time it was published, more than 3,000 had reached out to the Montreal police, asking for the charges against Angler to be dropped. However, the police proceeded to further the charges against him and demand that he stop speaking about the case. Angler has been a prominent critic of Israel and the Canadian military for over 20 years. He told Middle East Eye that his detainment is part of a targeting of those who oppose Canada's complicity in Israel's apartheid and genocide. Medical officials from Gaza reported that at least 6 Palestinian infants, including 3 newborns, have died from hypothermia since Tuesday. According to Al Jazeera correspondent Hani Mahmoud, doctors confirmed that for the past week, many families have been struggling to keep their babies warm during this cold weather. Hamas denounced the deaths of these infants, saying they are a result of Israel's criminal policies. They also released a statement urging mediators and the international community to take action and ensure the entry of shelter and other humanitarian supplies into the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military has not yet commented on the matter. Israel continues to block the entry of temporary housing into Gaza, despite it being among the conditions of the ceasefire agreement. On Tuesday, February 18, the day Israel was supposed to withdraw its troops from southern Lebanon, Israeli forces opened fire at southerners trying to return to their villages, killing around 15 people and injuring more than 83. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu justified Israel's refusal to withdraw from Lebanon by saying Hezbollah has not pulled back enough from the border area. Lebanon rejected those claims and urged Israel to abide by their deadline. Since November 27, the Israeli army has violated the ceasefire agreement over hundreds of times. The series of violations include ground incursions, aerial attacks, airspace violations, demolishing of civilian homes, and the reinforcement of military positions. For more, go to cjlo.com/news or follow CJLO News on Spotify. I'm back, no more smoke, just gum in my jaws.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Sorry if I sound a bit congested, been battling a cold. Actually, my whole family's been battling a cold, so I might not sound as good as I usually do, but we're still in studio today. And we're in March. We're officially in March. You know what that means? Spring is coming. And we got some big, big, big time sporting events coming up. March Madness right around the corner. We got big tournaments in tennis and golf. Just an awesome time of year for sports, really. You kind of go through the lull, which we just did. The Super Bowl's over. We lucky we had the Four Nations to talk about something. But besides that, I mean, the NBA are in the dog days. It's just a terrible time, really, to talk sports. And as a sports fanatic, man, that time was rough. It's a rough time of year. Rough time of year. But we had the Combine, the NFL this weekend, so it kind of got us going again. Here we go, new NFL season, free agency, big trade last week. So the NFL is on to the 2025 season. The Eagles are the champs in 2024. Great. But now we went to a Combine, a big trade happened. We're already hearing reports of players getting cut. It's officially the 2025 season. So I'm happy. I'm excited. Can't wait. I know we got a long time till the actual games start, but free agency is going to be awesome. The draft's going to be awesome. And the thing about this draft compared to other ones is we don't know what the hell's going to happen. Last year, you had three clear-cut quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Jane Daniels, Drake May. They're going 1, 2, 3. And then you know there's going to be Marvin Harrison Jr., Brock Bowers, Malik Nabers, guys like that are going to follow. But then the only question we had was, where's Bo Nix going to go? Where's J.J. McCarthy going to go? Is Michael Penix going to be a Raider? Nope, that was a surprise. The draft got picked by the Falcons. Okay, this year, if you look at the mock drafts, it is all over the place. All over the place. People have Abdul Carter, the Penn State pass rusher, going 1 to Tennessee. People have Travis Hunter going 1 to Tennessee. Then they have them taking a quarterback and Cam Ward at 1. Then there's mock drafts where the Giants trade up. The Browns take a quarterback. The Patriots trade back. The Raiders trade up. It's just no one knows for this draft. It's not an incredibly elite draft, if I can say that. I mean, the top-end talent, you got, I think, 2, maybe 3 elite players in the whole draft that are going to be all pros. Outside of that, it's a lot of just solid players. So that allows for teams to overdraft. It allows for a whole bunch of different things. But watching the Combine this weekend, man, I think it's better than we think. Like, running backs, which are now at a premium because of Saquon Barkley and Jahmyr Gibbs and seeing what those two guys did for their teams, this is one of the deepest running back classes I can remember. And the clear-cut number one running back, Ashton Jeanty, didn't even participate. He's like, you saw my tape at Boise State. Why do I even need to run? I'm going to do that my pro day. But then you had guys like Omarion Hampton from North Carolina, who was sensational. Then you have the two guys from Ohio State, Henderson and Judkins. They were unreal. Dylan Sampson from Tennessee. He was fantastic. And I'm drawing a blank. The kid from Virginia Tech. Oh, my God. He was the fastest one there. It's a very deep running back class. And you have kids like Cam Scataboo, who everyone was talking about a month ago, 2 months ago, after the show he was putting on at Arizona State. Oh, he might go up to the second round. Now he's slated as a 4th, 5th round pick. This is how deep of a draft class this is at running back. So I think there's going to be really good players that come from this draft. As much as people want to tell you, oh, it's not an elite draft, it's not the draft of last year. Okay, maybe at the high-end talent, no. But I've done the mock drafts. You can check out the first Tommy John Show mock draft on our Instagram. And on Threads as well. I'll share it with you guys later. This is before the Combine. Pre-Combine mock draft. But all I was hearing from experts when I had NFL Network on in the background and stuff is, oh, it's not a great draft. Listen, I think we're going to find really good players, nice players. Maybe not Hall of Famers, but solid NFL players all over the place in this draft. Maybe it doesn't have the high-end talent, but the meat of that draft, the second, the third, you know, day 2 and 3 picks are going to be impact players. That's the vibe I'm getting, or at least I got from the Combine. Man, there's just a lot of good players. Not great, but just really, and for a team like New England or the Giants or Tennessee, that might not be a great thing because you just need star talent. But if you're a team like Philadelphia, Detroit, Buffalo, teams who just need solid complementary players, this is going to be a very good draft for you because there are a lot of good young players. There really is. Now, I don't know what the hell is going to happen now because my mock draft was made before trades and people getting cut. And the big one that happened last week was Deebo Samuel getting dealt to the Washington Commanders. And the main reason why he got dealt was cap space purposes. That's what they were saying. He makes, what, over north of $17 million. His production's gone down the last 2 years. He's not the Deebo Samuel of 2021. Okay, we understand that. But I totally get it from Washington's perspective. They have a ton of cap space, a boatload of cap space. They need to surround Jaden Daniels. He proved he's an all-world talent, made to an NFC championship game. They have Terry McLaurin there. Zach Ertz is still there. They got a running back by committee. They're definitely going to look at a running back in the draft. But they go get Deebo Samuel. And you know Cliff Kingsbury, he's just a great play caller, schemes up great plays. He will try and find ways to get Deebo Samuel the ball in space, use him in the backfield. This is a big year for Deebo if he wants to get another contract, another big-time contract. But it's a perfect fit, in my opinion. I understand why San Francisco just, like, let's get him out of here. We have Ricky Pearsall, who we picked high last year. Ayuk's coming off the injury. We don't know what we're going to do with him, but we'd rather keep him. Kittle's still there. McCaffrey's still there. We need to clear up some cap space because we know Brock Purdy's got to get paid too. So it's an interesting time for San Francisco. I don't know what the hell they're going to do. They're really a question mark. Them and Miami, I think, are two huge question marks. We know what Washington's going to do, go and acquire talent. We know what the Patriots are going to do. We know what the Giants, the Raiders, what they're going to try and do. Teams like San Francisco and Miami and Houston and teams like that who are right on the cusp, you know, it's going to be interesting. Teams that were there that have faltered a bit, that we don't know. We really don't know what San Francisco is going to do or Miami is going to do. Miami like Tua. Do they love Tua? He gets injuries all the time. Gets injured constantly. Brock Purdy. Yeah, we all like Brock Purdy, but can he be the elite quarterback that the Niners want him to be? Team slowly getting older. Tyreek Hill ain't getting any younger. Jalen Ramsey not getting any younger. Armstead, those guys not getting younger for Miami. You look at San Francisco. Trent Williams is 37. Kittle's getting up there. McCaffrey's coming off a bad injury. Ayuk's coming off a bad injury. Those teams, when healthy, are absolute playoff teams, but they're a real mystery. Could they look at a quarterback in the later rounds? They're going to address the offensive line. What are they going to do? Those teams are huge question marks, and the one thing they had to do to make sure they can fill out some of the holes is make some moves, and that's what you saw from San Francisco. We love you, Deebo. You've done great things, but we need to move on here. And Washington, that's a great weapon. Terry McLaurin's a number one receiver. Now you get a great skill player in Deebo Samuel who you can use in the pass, the run game. You can use him on punt returns. You can use him wherever, because when he has the ball in his hands, he is a game wrecker. Still, we still get flashes. We had flashes last year of the 2021 Deebo. So it was only a fifth-round pick. Washington's like, hey, we might as well. If he has another great year, we're right there in the NFC Championship game again, possibly. So that was the big trade over the weekend, and I think it means teams are going to be aggressive. I wouldn't be surprised if New England looks to make a trade. Would not be surprised if the Giants look to make a trade. Teams are becoming more aggressive in the front office to try and make their teams better. A few years ago, it was, oh, we don't want to give up draft picks for players. Oh, draft picks are gold. We don't want to get rid of those draft picks. Now, post the Rams, when they went all in and won a Super Bowl, teams are like, oh, no, we'll just go all in. And the reason I bring this up is reports Buffalo and Detroit were calling Cleveland nonstop about Myles Garrett, offering insane trade packages. The trade hasn't happened yet, but they were all over the Browns this week in Indianapolis at the Combine trying to get a deal done or see if there's a possibility a deal can get done. Because, let's be honest, those teams do not need a nice young player to add to their roster. Both those teams need to go and make a move that can put them in the Super Bowl. And you look at both those teams, their offenses are elite, but they need some help getting after the quarterback. And I know in the Lions case, Aiden Hutchinson went down, McNeil went down, everyone got injured, and that wasn't the Lions defense from earlier in the year. I understand that. But if you have a defensive front with McNeil in the middle, and you have Myles Garrett and Aiden Hutchinson on the edge, I don't know how the hell you stop that. That's unbelievable. And then if you're in the Bills case, your offense played great. Josh Allen won the MVP in a year. You're supposed to take a step back because you lost people like Stephon Diggs, White, a bunch of other players. You made the AFC Championship game again. But the one thing that let you down was the defense. You couldn't get pressure on the defense. Von Miller's not who he used to be. They need a good pass rusher. And right there on the trade market's Myles Garrett. And I'll credit Buffalo. They're not going to just let him go to Detroit or not let him go to Philadelphia or somewhere else. They are going to go after him, which I credit them for. And Myles Garrett, he played in Cleveland. I don't think he would mind playing at Buffalo. Sure, he's not playing in the nicest of markets, but still, what's wrong with that? If I'm both those teams, I'm going all after Myles Garrett. There is absolutely zero reason not to. Oh, you're going to get a nice young player who in 2 years might pop. You're in Josh Allen's prime. The Lions, you're in a position where Gibbs is on a rookie deal. The St. Brown contract only kicks in this year. You got Montgomery on good money. Like, this Laporta hasn't gotten a huge contract yet. This is your time to go and win. This is your time. Go get Myles Garrett. Go win a Super Bowl. And I think teams are realizing that. We used to put so much pressure on GMs to hold on the draft picks because they're the holy grail. Now teams are starting to realize, yeah, you know what? Maybe we should just trade some draft picks. And sometimes it works. Sure, there's occasional ways in which it doesn't. We're all going to remember that Carson Wentz trade with Indianapolis and Philadelphia, and that gave the Eagles a ton of assets to help them build this Super Bowl winning team. Okay. Or we can all look at some just boneheaded trades like Matt Judon for a high third round pick. Okay, that didn't work out for Atlanta. But still, you don't fault them for trying. I don't fault Indianapolis trying to get Carson Wentz and reuniting him with Frank Reich. I don't fault the Atlanta Falcons saying we need to get a pass rusher and they go after Matt Judon. I don't fault those teams for being aggressive. They realized there was a hole on their roster. They made a move to try and fix it. And I respect it. Not every trade works out. There's some trades that make zero sense, and then there's trades that do make sense. If the Bills or the Lions trade two first-round picks and a third or whatever to get Myles Garrett, and the Browns use that to build a very good team to be right there in the AFC every year, they get a star receiver, they get a star tackle or defensive player from that trade, I wouldn't fault either of those teams. Like, losers, you set the Browns up for years to come. No, I'd be like, hey, Myles Garrett was available. You were this close to a Super Bowl. You rolled the dice. And I think GMs are starting to clue in. Like, you know what? Who cares? I believe this move right now will make my team better. And you know who does a lot of those trades? Howie Roseman. Look what he did for A.J. Brown. Traded up to get Devontae Smith using draft picks. Sure, he traded in the division with Dallas, allowed Dallas to get Micah Parsons, but he doesn't care. He got the Heisman Trophy winner and now a star receiver in the NFL by doing it. He doesn't care. He made the team better, and GMs are starting to catch on. So Washington, that trade might blow up in their face. Debo Samuel might do nothing, but I don't fault Washington for doing it. They had the cap space to take his one-year contract on, and it was a fifth-round draft pick. Low risk, high reward. And if it blows up in their face, if Debo becomes a locker room cancer, I mean, that happens. Do I fault Buffalo for trading for Stephon Diggs? No. You had a young quarterback who showed talent in Josh Allen, and Stephon Diggs definitely helped his development. But Tommy, that pick became Justin Jefferson. Okay. They didn't know that at the time. But still, it was a good trade for both parties, and Buffalo thought getting Stephon Diggs, a true number one wide receiver at the time, would help Josh Allen. And it did. And I don't fault Buffalo one bit for pulling that trade off. I know. So there's an exciting time in the NFL, even though it is March. We have free agency around the corner. Teams are already making moves. I think the Bengals announced today they released their guard, Alex Kappa. The Eagles are releasing Darius Slay. So there are moves to be made. And then obviously the big one, which we talked about at length last week, which I said would not happen. Matt Stafford going somewhere else. Oh, wait, no. He's staying in L.A., like I said here on this very program 100 times. I said he'd be foolish to leave. And credit Matt Stafford. I knew what he was doing the whole time, but credit him. He's wise. He's smart. He's been in the league a long time. He's played on some awful teams in Detroit. He was not going to take the money and leave L.A., leave Sean McVay, leave that weather, leave that football team in that division to go to the New York Giants, who are an absolute disaster, or the Las Vegas Raiders. He was never, ever, ever doing that. Ever. There was a 0.0% chance Matt Stafford was leaving L.A. He was not doing it. I remember what I said on this show perfectly. I said, he's made over $360 million. Matt Stafford will not leave for a couple extra million bucks. He's not going to do it. Sure enough, he just did it to get as much money as he wanted from the Rams. And the Rams would be foolish to let him go. You're going to bring in Aaron Rodgers? You're confident with Jimmy Garoppolo? Really? No, you were going to trade no one. You weren't going to trade Matt Stafford. Oh, we're going to trade Matt Stafford. Really? No, you were not. And the Rams tried to act tough, said to his agent, go find what you're worth and come back to us. And you know what Matt Stafford probably told his agent? He said, go out there, see how much teams are offering me, bring it back to the Rams, let's see if we can cut a deal, and we'll take less. That's exactly what happened. And reports are he took a pay cut to stay with the Rams. The Giants offered him more, the Raiders offered him more, the Steelers are interested, they were going to offer him more. But he's like, nope, I'm going to take a bit less, stay in LA, which is the smart decision. He, like we said countless times, he's a few years away, 2-3 years away, of him being a first ballot Hall of Famer. If he continues to play like he has in LA over the last few years, make an NFC divisional round, possibly an NFC championship game, maybe makes a Super Bowl appearance because the Rams are just getting better and better, he's right there. The numbers are going to be there. Has a few 5,000-yard seasons. He's going to be top five in passing yards when he's done. He's already won a Super Bowl. If he goes to another Super Bowl, maybe wins another Super Bowl. This is all possibilities with the Rams. It's not a crazy thing to say. They had a chance to beat the Eagles on the road. They had, 3rd and 2 from the 13-yard line? And if the center doesn't miss the block, they probably score and win the football game and take down the Super Bowl champion Eagles on the road in the snow coming from L.A. So it's not crazy to say, hey, maybe the Rams with another free agent cycle and another draft class could be right there with the Eagles. It's not crazy to say. Do I still think Philly's better? Do I still think Detroit's better when healthy? Yes, but the Rams are right there. And they have the best coach in the conference. So it's not crazy to say these things. Matt Stafford knows that too. It would be foolish for him to leave. And I said it, foolish if he leaves. And guess what? He's staying around and for 2 to 3 more years. It would make no sense for him to leave whatsoever. So credit the Rams, credit Matt Stafford. They're going to be right there in the NFC again. But what this does, him heading back to LA, it really puts a spotlight on both the Raiders and the Giants. Because those are two situations where, man, they need a quarterback in the worst way. Like, it's been a long time since the teams needed a quarterback like the New York Giants and the Las Vegas Raiders. Maybe the Giants even more so because Dable and Shane have been there for a few years now. They have to get a quarterback. There is no two ways around it. They have to get a quarterback. And it's Pete Carroll's first year with the Raiders. New GM. They got time. They got a few years at this. So if they don't love the quarterbacks, they don't love Shador Sanders. I don't think Cam Ward will be there at 6. But if they don't love Shador Sanders or Jackson Dart, feel like ownership's like, all right, fair enough. And if they don't love him, we got free agency in a few weeks, they're going to go after Sam Darnold. They might go after a Kirk Cousins, go after a Daniel Jones. There's other options for 1 year if Pete Carroll does not like the quarterbacks in this class. But if you're the New York Giants, if you are the New York Football Giants, I don't know what the hell you do. If you hate all the quarterbacks, If you hate Cam Ward, if you hate Shedeur Sanders, what do? You're putting all your faith in Fields and Sam Darnold and Aaron Rodgers at 41 years old? The Giants have to take a quarterback. I'm not saying that's the smart long-term thing. I don't think Cam Ward's going to be as good as the three quarterbacks, or even how many did we see this year? Five quarterbacks we saw this year. I like Dable. I think he's a good play caller, and he just had an awful situation to work with. But this is just a huge pressure moment for him and for the GM, Joe Shane. Because even if they don't love Cam Ward, even if they don't love Shedeur Sanders, they're going to have to take him, in my opinion. They tried to trade up for Drake May last year. Then they had the chance. Remember, they picked sixth overall. So Caleb Williams went one. Jaden Daniels went two. Drake May went three. Marvin Harrison went four. Joe Alt went five, the tackle from Notre Dame. Here we are, Giants. And yes, they took Malik Nabers, who's already one of the best young receivers in the league, and it's not a bad pick by any means. They needed skill position players, and Malik Nabers was the best one on the board. So I don't fault. It's not a bad pick. But you knew you needed a quarterback. You saw Daniel Jones. You're going to bring him back again? And on the board, there was Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., J.J. McCarthy. They were all on the board. And you knew Tennessee liked McCarthy. And you knew Denver liked Bo Nix. That's the reports we all heard. Now, Michael Penix to Atlanta, I don't think anyone had. But the reports were two of the best QB minds in the league, Kevin O'Connell and Sean Payton, loved those two quarterbacks. And they punted on them. They took Nabers. They didn't even trade out. They took Nabers, got a number one receiver, and let those three guys who looked pretty darn good. I know J.J. McCarthy was only in the preseason and he got hurt, but Michael Penix played well in those two games, and Bo Nix had an awesome rookie year, and now they're in a spot where they have to take Cam Ward at three if he's there. They're in a tricky situation, so I assume they go after someone in free agency. They're going to go after Sam Darnold. They're going to go after Aaron Rodgers. They're going to go after Kirk Cousins. They're going to go after Justin Fields. They're going to go after one of those guys just to have an option in case Cam Ward's not there. But they know they have to get a young rookie quarterback. They have to. Just to keep ownership off them a bit. Because there was a strong case to have them fired this year, especially with Hard Knocks, the whole Saquon Barkley situation. It was a nightmare for the New York Giants front office this past year. And here we are. 1 year later, they have no quarterback on the roster. They have a few good players on the team. Like Lawrence is one of the best defensive tackles in the league. The Brian Burns is a good young player. I think Thibodeau's pretty good. Malik Nabers, Andrew Thomas. They have good players on the team. But their quarterback play since Eli Manning, apart from that one good year Daniel Jones had, has just been awful. And here they are in 2025. And they have to take a rookie quarterback. I'm sorry. If you want to put all your eggs, Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, in the Sam Darnold, Justin Fields basket, do it. But I just don't see it. They have to take a rookie quarterback. I'm sorry. I don't think ownership would accept anything else. You have to. Just so you can say, hey, we drafted this guy. We really think he's going to be good. He's going to be the future of our franchise. No. And if they take Cam Ward and he hits, their job will be safe. But if they take Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, Jackson Dart, and it blows up in their face, it's going to be very hard for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll to find head coaching jobs and GM jobs ever again. That is an absolute fact. This is as big as an offseason as a coach and a GM has ever had. Everyone's laughing at you for letting Saquon Barkley walk to Philadelphia. You gave Daniel Jones that awful contract after one good year, and you didn't take a quarterback in an incredibly strong quarterback draft. Credit to them, they tried to trade up for Drake May. New England wisely said no, but you still had the option of McCarthy, Penix, and Nix. and you passed on all of them. Neighbors is a very good player. But when's the last time a wide receiver single-handedly won a team a Super Bowl? We're going to get into a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the red hot Montreal Canadiens who, man, just can't lose right now post the Four Nations break. They got a huge, huge stretch of games coming up. They're right there in the wild card picture. I don't know if anyone saw that. We also have the NHL trade deadline on Friday. So we'll get into the possibilities. Will Rantanen get traded? We had the huge Seth Jones trade over the weekend, him going from Chicago to Florida. We'll get into that. And we'll preview Montreal and Buffalo tonight at the Bell Center. Right after this quick word from our sponsors, I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. And we will speak to you guys after this break.
City to discover new talent with its World Music Showcase, the 18th edition of City Doll by Musique du Monde. Come discover 36 acts every Tuesday and Wednesday at Club Balatou until April 9th. Take part in the free showcase concerts and vote for your favorite artist. More info on Celador.com, Facebook, and Instagram.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
All good beginnings. Need some variation. Tune into REVC with me, Maxwell. It's something different every week. Mondays at noon on CJLO 1690 AM.
One, two, three, four!
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So what a stretch by the Montreal Canadiens. I even as a Bruins fan, and man, my Bruins are just a disaster at this point. They can't beat anyone. They beat Pittsburgh on Saturday, but that was an awful performance earlier in the week. And then yesterday against Minnesota, I know they had chances, but could we get one goal? And now Marchand's hurt, Trent Frederick's hurt, who we were going to trade. Just a disastrous year for the Bruins. And it begs the question, will Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, will those guys be on the hot seat? We shall see. Because this was a year where the Bruins retooled. They got Lindholm, gave him a fortune, gave Zadorov a fortune, and both of them have been huge disappointments. Huge. And Swayman's played better of late, and it still hasn't really mattered. They have to win some games coming up. Yes, they have Nashville coming up, but then Carolina, Tampa, Florida, Ottawa, Tampa, Vegas. These are just hard, hard games coming up, and they need to win them. Because right now, they're a couple points out of a playoff spot, but they've played more games than anyone. There's 20 games left. It's now or never for the Bruins. And honestly, I'm fine. If you want to trade Trent Frederick, trade Beecher, trade guys like that, Brandon Carlo, get some draft picks because we have no prospects. Fine, do it. But I don't want this little, we're in, but we're trading players. No, no, no. Just decide, are we retooling? I think we should. We're not going to win the cup this year. Trade away Carlo, trade away Frederick, Beecher, Brazo, Geeky, trade guy. We need picks. We need prospects. And then we'll have some money in free agency and then we'll spend some there. But just start stocking up the prospect pool because it is shockingly bad. Sorry if I sound congested. But Montreal, man, for a team that were supposed to be sellers at the deadline, for a team that was supposed to be in the bottom third of the league, a team that was 2 to 3 years away from competing for a playoff spot. They are right there in the Eastern Conference. They have won 4 in a row. They're undefeated since the All-Star break, the Four Nations break. And they've played great. Montembeau played great. Dobesh played great the other night. Slavkovsky looks like a man on a mission. Lane Hutson has just been outrageously good. And here they are. They are right there in the Eastern Conference. And tonight is a must-win game again. And I hate to say it when you've won 4 in a row that, oh, this one has to be a must-win game. But you got Buffalo at home. Buffalo at home. There should be no excuses. You win this hockey game going away. Because the Sabres are not a hockey team anymore. They aren't. I don't know what they are, but it ain't a hockey team. At least it ain't an NHL team. And I feel for their fan base. At least you got Josh Allen and the Bills, but they break your heart every year. Because if I'm a Buffalo hockey fan, I don't know how. It's just awful. They can't win. They haven't made the postseason, I think, since 2010. It's just a bad time to be a Sabres fan. And they have good players down there, too. They have Dahlin. They have Owen Power. They have Tage Thompson. They have Cousins. Alex Tuck. They have good players. And they still can't get anything going. It is unbelievable. Ugh. They're last place in the Atlantic by 10 points. Scary. But they're in Montreal tonight. And if the Canadiens can win this game, not only are they right in the postseason push, but they can, I don't want to say be aggressive at the deadline, but they can make some moves here. They got a big road trip after this. I understand that. They're out west, which is always tough. Western Canada, they have Edmonton, they have Calgary, they have Vancouver. Those all three are playoff caliber teams. I mean, Calgary and Vancouver are competing for that last playoff spot, but they're all in the hunt. And if there's a time to get Edmonton, maybe you want Edmonton now. They were awful on that Eastern road trip. No, they got the win in Carolina on Saturday. But the Oilers have not been the Oilers of earlier in the year. So that might be a good time to run into them. And then Vancouver, what's going on with Pettersson? And they're a mess. So as Western road trips go, I mean, the hard game might be in Calgary. Edmonton will be tough, but they just haven't played well. So I'm saying if there's a time to play Edmonton, it might be now. And Seattle, the Shane Wright-Slavkovsky rivalry might be blossoming because Shane Wright's having a very nice season. And he's right there. He's right around the same points as Slavkovsky, I believe. He had 2 assists the other night. He's turning into a very nice player, Shane Wright. And people like to jump to conclusions saying, oh, this guy's better than this guy. This guy's better than this guy. It takes time. These kids are still in their early 20s. It took Nathan MacKinnon a few years to pop. Took Reinhardt how many years to pop? Remember him in Buffalo? He couldn't do anything. He goes to Florida. He's a 50-goal scorer, wins a Stanley Cup. Sam Bennett, Calgary gave up on him. He goes to Florida. He's an all-world player. It takes time for some people. And Shane Wright was in the minors. Went to the AHL last year. He went to the AHL for parts of this year, and since coming up in November, late November, he's been one of their best players, if not their best player. The talent was there since day one, but Montreal wanted a big physical winger. They took Slavkovsky. Not saying it was the bad pick. But Shane Wright and Logan Cooley, for people to say, like, oh, man, thank God we didn't take those guys, they look pretty darn good, too. And for a draft class that wasn't supposed to be anything good, you're getting some decent players from there. Lane Hutton was from that draft class, I believe. So they're starting to pop. It takes 2 to 3 years. People to act like this guy stinks or that guy stinks just because one guy's played more in the NHL, it's bogus. And it's not true. But Montreal, this is a must-win game. They have Montembeau, I believe, in Nets tonight. This is a must-win game. Buffalo at home. Right before Western road trip, you can bank 2 more points. And then not only will you be right in the playoff spot, but you also leapfrog Boston and Ottawa if you win tonight, assuming the Senators lose. But the Bruins don't play tonight. If Montreal win, they go up to 65 points, and that would put them 5th in the Atlantic. 5th. And right there in the wild card contention. I'm really been impressed with Montreal. They've especially Lane Hutson as a rookie to be that good. Him making plays all over the ice, not just offensively, but defensively now too. He's going to turn into a fantastic, maybe even Norris winning type player. He is electric. He's just getting better and better and better. And he's already maybe their best defenseman. He probably is. He's probably their best player right now. I mean, Suzuki's good, and Caulfield's now, what, a 30-goal scorer. He's going to be a 40-something goal scorer this year. But still, if you ask me every night who I watch, I'm like, damn, he's playing awesome. It's Lane Hutson. It's Lane Hutson. He plays a ton of minutes. He's always giving his 100% effort. He's back-checking. He's pushing the play up the ice. Does number one power play minutes. He's doing everything as a rookie. And he's really stepped up since Caden Gooley's gone down. He really has. And he's emerged as a true number one defenseman already, which is just a great sign for Montreal. And to think they have Demidov coming up and all these other kids, it's looking like a very good rebuild. Now, there are still the question marks of what do you do with Jake Evans? What do you do with Armia? What do you do with Dvorak, Savard, Josh Anderson? If you think you can make a push to the postseason, then keep him around. But if you think you can get a good offer for him, if a team like Edmonton or Winnipeg calls about Jake Evans or Armia, a lot of teams would call on Savard too, a right shot, grizzled defenseman. A lot of teams are going to make calls about those players. And if a Montreal, you hear him out. But I think if there's one that can go, then they all can go, if that makes sense. If you think, oh, we can do fine without him, you have young prospect players. Like this Owen Beck kid came up in place of Kirby Dock, who's out for the year. He looked very good. Do you still have Logan Mailloux down there in the minors? If you get rid of Savard, you still have replacements there. And I don't think Montreal should just bail on the rebuild just to make the postseason. Maybe I'm wrong in that. You want them to get postseason experience. But if you don't think you can sign Jake Evans this offseason, or you don't think you could sign Joel Armia, then I think you got to move him. At least get something for him. Or they're not going to be here. Get some draft picks for him, because there's a bunch of teams like the Winnipegs, like the Edmontons, Colorado, Vegas, Washington, teams that are going to be in the postseason, need some depth down their lineup. They would love to have players like Dvorak, like Jake Evans, like Joel Armia. So it's going to be an interesting week for Montreal. If they were worse, it would have been far easier to decide to be like, yeah, it's we're trading everyone not under the age of 26 and who's on expiring contracts. We'll just trade everyone. Dvorak, you're gone. Savard, you're gone. They might even take calls on Gallagher. Who knows? And take some salary. Who knows? They'd just be up for sale. But they've played themselves into the mix, and now it's going to be a hard week for Kent Hughes, Jeff Gordon, and that Montreal front office, because it's a very, very, very tough decision. Personally, I would try and talk with Jake Evans' team, see if you can get a contract extension done. If that's realistic, you keep him around. I like Joel Armia. I would keep some of them around. I think playoff experience is valuable. But if I'm going to let a couple first-round picks or a second-round pick just go away for nothing, just because I thought it could make the postseason and we didn't, I don't know. Maybe there's some young players in Laval that you can give some playing time to. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. But I've heard constantly from the front office of the Montreal Canadiens, that they're going to stick to a plan. They're going to stick to a rebuild. And they're going to stick to the slow process and building this organization the correct way. So that tells me, when I heard that, you know what? They are going to trade Jake Evans. They are going to trade Dvorak. They are going to trade Armia, Savard, and acquire more picks, more prospects, and keep building up this farm system and having just a fantastic team in a few years and a great prospect pool as well. That's what I took from Ken Hughes' comments from a few weeks ago. But this is pre-4-game winning streak. Could be 5 tonight if they beat Buffalo. So it's a really interesting spot for Montreal. I'm really split on it. Because I think if you can get this young group playoff experience, if you can push to the playoffs and Lane Hutson plays in the postseason and Suzuki and Caulfield get to feel the playoffs again, it's been a long time since they've been back. If you can give guys like Struble and Newhook more postseason time, it just makes sense. It really makes sense. However, if you're throwing away five or six picks because you don't trade Evans or Armia Savard and you don't make the playoffs, that's going to stink a bit. I'm sure they'll make some moves. I don't know what it is. I'm sure they'll make some kind of a move. The other big story we have to address, and we will address it after the break, Mikko Rantanen possibly being on the move again. I know he's played better as of late, but it just hasn't worked in Carolina, and it looks like he doesn't want to sign a long-term deal, and this has the potential, if Carolina don't trade him and he leaves in the offseason, to be one of the worst trades ever. They did it with Gensel last year. You think, oh, they're never going to do that again, giving up a ton of assets to a guy and he doesn't re-sign. They did it here with Mikko Rantanen, and they gave up even more. They gave up Nikas and picks. Oh, and Nikas, look how good he looks playing with Nathan MacKinnon. Oh, my goodness. So we'll get into Mikko Rantanen after the break, and also we need to quickly talk about the NHL trade deadline, which teams should be buying and which teams should be selling. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Hi, I'm Sydney Sheedy.
And I'm Piper Curtis.
We are the producers of Discordia, a 10-part audio docuseries for CJLO 1690 AM, funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada Radio Meters Program.
Tune in on Monday, March 10th at 6 p.m. for the 7th episode of Discordia on the 2023 crew campaign and how they became Concordia's new teaching and research assistant labor union.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with Bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
Here on the Tommy John Show. So this Mikko Rantanen situation, which I don't know if I've ever seen anything like this. It is just crazy. They go and acquire him earlier in the year to give him more time to work out a long-term extension. Colorado, clearly him and Rantanen's camp were far off on offers. And he gets dealt, which was just a huge surprise. Then you see the return. Oh my God, Martin Nikas, picks. Then you have Chicago just retaining salary for no reason, just getting a draft pick for it. Okay. But it was just so surprising when that trade went down. And everyone thought, oh, well, now a long-term deal is going to get done. He's going to play with Sebastian Aho, his Finnish friend. You know, it's going to be great. He's absolutely going to sign that long-term extension. They're going to give him 12, 13, 14 million bucks because they haven't signed anyone of note late. Like, it's going to get done. And since that trade has gone down, Mikko Rantanen, I know he got a few points the other day, but it just hasn't worked out. He hasn't looked like himself. They tried to get a deal done over the break. The Carolina Hurricanes met with Rantanen's agent, and they couldn't come to an agreement. And now they are terrified, absolutely terrified, that Mikko Rantanen's going to walk out the door for nothing. Like Jake Guentzel last year when they traded a first-round pick, other prospects, just to have him walk out the door. And that is the worst-case scenario for Carolina. They give up Martinikas. They give up Martinikas to get Rantanen, but then Rantanen's going to leave a few weeks later. And Martinikas, I think, has term left on his contract at a good number. So that really doesn't make sense. So this could be a disaster, an absolute disaster for the Carolina Hurricanes. And so what do you do if you don't think you can get a deal done? You try and get something for them. And there's going to be teams that would be interested. Absolutely, it's Mikko Rantanen. But not necessarily a team he wants to sign with, a team that's going to try and win a cup. So I would not be surprised, a team like Winnipeg, Edmonton. Because you know what they're going to have to do, Carolina? They're going to have to retain some of the salary to make it work if he wants to go to a cup contender. Vegas. LA. There's teams that'd be interested in Mikko Rantanen. And I know you won't get the return that you gave up to get him in the first place, but if you can get something, you don't go complete. You don't give up Martinikas and all that for Rantanen for him to leave. No, you at least get something out of this Mikko Rantanen situation, whether it be prospects or picks or something. I think you got to deal him. I do. If you don't think Mikko Rantanen's going to sign, then what's the point of keeping him? The real question is, do you think you can win a Stanley Cup the way Mikko Rantanen's playing right now in Carolina? I don't. So what do? You pick up the phone, say, hey, we'll just take some prospects. We'll take a player. We'll take a first-round pick. We'll take something. And you will have to retain some of the salary, but who cares? It's for another, few months. Take care of that salary. Whether it be 25% or 50% or whatever it is, take care of that salary in Carolina. Get some get something. I'd be stunned if they don't trade him and he goes somewhere else. I'd be stunned because that would just make no sense. They'd be right back where they started with Jake Guentzel last year. They have to go out and see what they can get for him. You go right to Mikko Rantanen right now and be like, hey, just be honest. Are you going to sign here? Well, this is our final offer. If he says no, we're going to trade you. Here's our last offer. You don't take it, we're trading you. And I think LA makes a lot of sense. I think Edmonton, if you retain salary, make a lot of sense. Vancouver. Maybe you can get Pettersson in a deal. I don't know. I don't know. But there's possibilities, and I think Carolina would be foolish not to call. I think Winnipeg makes a ton of sense. They're right there to win a cup. Dallas. There's a whole bunch of teams that make sense. And you can get picks and prospects, and all you got to do is retain 50% of the salary for a couple more weeks, or months, I should say. I think it'd be foolish not to. Because you cannot just let another all-world player walk out the door for nothing after you've given up a ton to try and extend them. They have to do this, Carolina. They have to. Final offer, Mikko Rantanen and your agent. Here it is. If you don't want it, we're trading you. And they got to pick up the pace here. We're 1:55 on a Monday. The trade deadline's 3-4 o'clock on Friday. Final offer, here you go, and we'll see what happens. But if I'm Carolina and Mikko Rantanen's not thrilled on staying, I'm immediately picking up in the phone and I am shopping him so I get something in return. Something. So there's a lot of teams that are going to be buyers and a lot of teams are going to be sellers. I think my Bruins should be a seller. Buffalo, I think they got to be a seller. Chicago, Seth Jones, okay, that made sense. They got a pretty good return, actually. I know they had to hold back some of the salary, but you get a first-round pick and a young stud goalie in Spencer Knight for Seth Jones, who wasn't meshing in there at all. And it's a good pickup for Florida. I mean, getting Seth Jones, a big, tall, right-shot defenseman, will play in your top four. He's going to eat a lot of minutes come postseason time. That's a great pickup. It's a good trade for both sides. And what I really want to see teams do that are buying is just go all in. Go all in. Toronto, how many more times are you just going to let this core four go out there and not like try and enhance it? I know they brought in O'Reilly 1 year and they brought in like Luke Shen another. But that wasn't going to get anything done. If you're the Leafs, you can call Carolina about Rantanen. You could have called about adding Seth Jones. I know you have Tanev there and other pieces, but you've been to the postseason enough, Toronto, to know what it takes to win. Because you've gone, I don't know how many times now in the Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, Riley era, you've been every year and you lose. So you think you'd learn something. So that would be interesting. I think Toronto's got to go all in. What are you going to keep prospects for? I watched, what was it, Minton and Cowan at the juniors. I don't see superstar with them. Get them in a package and try and get a veteran here. If you're Washington, you're playing great. Go out. Get some players. And the one team I think has to is Winnipeg. Because the notion of Winnipeg being a great regular season team and then just losing it all in the postseason is becoming true. Because every time they get to the postseason, they just collapse. Like last year against Colorado is a perfect example. Hellebuck, oh, best goalie in the world. He's letting six go past them. And they got it. And Winnipeg's not a free agent destination. They're not going to sign these big time free agents. No offense to Winnipeg, but it's just players would rather live in California than Winnipeg, Manitoba, let's be honest. And the only way you can build a championship contender is through the draft and making smart trades. If I'm Winnipeg, I'm calling Montreal about Armia, calling them about Evans. I am calling Buffalo about Dylan Cousins and Bowen Byram. I want to see if I can get young players, bottom six players, anyone who can slightly help my hockey team. Because I don't know how many times the Winnipeg Jets can get to a playoff round and lose before they start blowing this thing up. As great as they've been this year, and Scheifele's been unbelievable, and Kyle Connor's been unbelievable, and Hellebuck's in the MVP conversation. But if they get to the postseason again, and they didn't go all in, and they lose in the first or second round, that fan base is going to start getting angry. So if I'm Winnipeg, you got nothing to lose. Go out there, try and just add depth, add pieces, and make a run of this thing. Same goes for Toronto. Same goes for Washington. Same goes for Edmonton. All those teams. You got to go all in. You have to. Great show. Sorry if I sounded a bit congested today. I am a bit sick, but I wanted to come on the airwaves and talk to you guys today. We will speak next Monday, where we'll recap some of the Indian Wells tournament, the ATP 1000, and we will talk more about the NFL draft in a few weeks. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Have a good week, and I'll speak to you all next Monday.